I want to begin with some pictures up on the screen, and I want you to tell me, we're going to have three of them, and I want you to tell me after you look at these three pictures what they have in common, okay? Let's see if we can do this. Let's see how you're doing, okay? There's Charlie Brown trying to kick that football, but he never seems to quite get the kick. All right, how about a historical one? Anybody know what that is? Custer at the Little Bighorn. All right, in case you didn't pick it up from the picture. And then thirdly, again, a historical one, because I majored in history. This is Neville Chamberlain. After he came back from negotiating half of Europe to Adolf Hitler in World War II and told everyone that he had now established peace in our time. And of course, not long thereafter, we were embroiled in World War II. So what do these three pictures have in common? Anybody know? Exactly. They are all examples of failure. I had one more example, but I held it back because it was such an obvious example. Let's see if we got there. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist. You know, as a society, we are consumed with the quest for success. No one wants to be remembered for the times they have failed. But if you study the great men and women of the Bible, you will find that almost universally they experience pretty significant failure before ever achieving great things for God. And in that process, they learned that their failures were what God often used to build into them the kind of character that they would need to achieve ultimate success in His eyes. An example of this from our past is a man. Let me know if you can name him. As a young man, he went into business. Business failed. Went bankrupt. So he ran for the state legislature. He lost. So he tried the business road again. He failed again, another bankruptcy. So he ran for Speaker of the State House. He was defeated. Next, he ran for the Congress. He was defeated. He ran again and was elected, only to lose his seat 2 years later. So he ran for the United States Senate twice and was defeated twice. Anybody know who this was? Yes. Next, he ran for president. He was elected. Abraham Lincoln. Perhaps our greatest president. You see, friends, there is no one in this room who has not failed at something in their lives. So let's set the record straight before proceeding any further. I'm going to list a series of questions. And if you can answer no to every one of these, then you can leave now. You don't have to stay for the rest of the message because you don't need to hear it, all right? Are you ready? You got to answer no to every one. Have you ever eaten with the wrong utensil? Have you ever worn colors that did not match? Have you ever gotten an F on a test? Have you ever gone out for a part in a play or a show and did not get the part? Have you ever been cut from a sports team? Have you ever eaten a Twinkie or a donut when you should have had an apple or an orange? Have you ever not gotten the job you applied for or been let go from a job that you had? Have you ever lost patience with and spoken angry words to a spouse or a child? Have you ever taken a drug or other substance you should have avoided? Have you ever looked at a site on your computer that you should have avoided? If you have never done any of the things I have just listed, raise your hand and I will dismiss you, all right? I will dismiss you after one more question. Have you ever lied in response to a question asked by your pastor as part of a Sunday morning message talk, all right? See, we all have experienced failure. And some of you are struggling with it in your world right now. And then you come into a church and you look around and you think, boy, these people, they all look like they have it all together. They couldn't understand what I'm going through. Yes, they do. Because all of us have experienced failure. And this morning we want to take a look at an Old Testament character who, much like Abraham Lincoln, experienced some pretty significant failures on the road to doing great things. And his name was Moses. Let's do a quick look back at the first 40 years of Moses' life. Although his mother had to give him up as a baby to save his life, things went pretty well for him after that. He was adopted into one of the most influential and richest families of all Egypt. He was brought up in the palace by the daughter of the Pharaoh and treated like Pharaoh's own grandson. He was educated in the college known as perhaps the Harvard of ancient Egypt. Moses grew up to be both a statesman and a warrior. And after winning a great victory at the head of the Egyptian army, he became a national hero who many thought would one day succeed the Pharaoh as the ruler of all Egypt. At the age of 39, Moses had climbed all the right pyramids. He was the poster boy for success. And this would all be well and good if Moses had stayed on this track. But his life would now take a dramatic turn, as he would now experience a failure that would haunt him for the next 40 years. We won't go into the actual account in the book of Exodus yet. Instead, let's look at what the early Christ follower, Stephen, would say about this event in Moses' life. For that, you can turn to the book of Acts. It'll be up on the screen, but if you have your Bible, turn there as well. And I'm going to actually pick up here in verse 20. Acts 7, verse 20. At that time, Moses was born. This is Stephen talking. And he was no ordinary child. For 3 months, he was cared for in his father's house. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. When Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian, so he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you are brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" But the man who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" When Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons. Moses, with all this potential, thinking that the people would applaud his coming to one of their defense, is shocked when they don't see things that way. Thinking that God would applaud him for taking up for one of his people, is shocked when God does not bless his rash actions. And Moses, feeling misunderstood and rejected, flees into the desert. Now let's delve a little deeper by going to the actual Old Testament account in the Old Testament book of Exodus. We're going to just look at a couple of verses from that account. First, Exodus 2, 11 and 12. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Interesting. Moses looks one way, nobody's watching. Looks the other way, nobody's watching. But Moses never looks up to see what God thinks about it all. Moses acts on his own without any input from God, and it did not work out well, did it? Pick it up in verse 15. When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Word had obviously spread quickly, and Grandpappy Pharaoh was not happy. And Moses now fears for and flees for his very life. And here we see the primary catalyst, I believe, of Moses' failure. You see, it was a failure to rely on God. God had no role in Moses' actions. And this is the challenge of the self-made man or woman. They think they can handle whatever comes their way without God. And yet we see these incredible words from the Gospel of John. Jesus speaks this. He says, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit." But then read the last part with me. Apart Let's try that again. Apart from
me,
apart from God, we can do nothing. But because Moses acts without God's input or leading, he suffers the loss of all that he had known. He goes from the palace to the pasture, from wealth to poverty, from privilege to persecution, from purpose to purposelessness. And this leads to the natural next step that many of you have faced after feeling like you have failed. Moses sinks into a deep depression. You know, depression often follows when we lose something, be it a spouse who walks out, or a child who rejects us, or a job we get fired from. And it always feels even worse when we know it's our fault, our failure, that resulted in that loss. And it is those feelings of rejection that often deepens the depression that comes with our failures. And I think the thing that may have hurt Moses the most in this situation was it was his own people, the Jews, who rejected him. Because when we are rejected by those closest to us, that's when the wound runs the deepest. Well, Moses, sensing all that he had lost, because he, like most men, derived a large amount of personal significance from his work. And think about it, he is now unemployed. This man who had not had to worry about finances is now broke. I mean, Moses' fall was just as rapid and as painful. I was trying to think of one this rapid, this painful. The only one that came to my mind was Joe Paterno, the coach of Penn State, who one day is this revered coach, and the next day, it's all gone. Well, practically overnight, Moses had gone from being a somebody to being a nobody. Previously, he could not walk the streets without being noticed, always surrounded by well-wishers, hanger-ons, and now he is isolated and alienated, living in the desert of Midian, a flat, barren area with few cities or people. And this is often how failure leaves us, feeling lonely and lost and confused. See this in Exodus 2:22. Zipporah, that was the wife Moses took, gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, I have become an alien in a foreign land. Well, even though Moses may not have yet realized it, and even though it's interesting, but God chose to only devote 7 verses to this next 40 years of Moses' life, I believe that God was doing a major work on Moses' character during this time. You see, before, Moses had been a man on a mission. He had accomplished so much before turning 40. I mean, Moses, for his first 40 years, had lived in a hurry-up world. And you know what it's like to live in that kind of world, where you're always on the cutting edge of deadlines. You know, so many of us live with this sense that there are not enough hours in the day or days in the week. We're always looking for ways to go faster. Richard Swenson's book, Margins, he talks of all the products that have names that are designed to appeal to this need for speed in today's world. Federal Express, Sprint, Quicken, Slim Fast, Speedos. But the challenge with living this way is it is not very conducive to God's molding us into the image of his Son, Jesus Christ. Romans 8:29 says that God's will for all of his followers is that they be conformed to the image of his Son. God wants to be about building character into his children. But friends, you cannot microwave the building of character. So let me just ask you, is there anybody here who feels like your relationship with God is mostly superficial? That you are not really experiencing any measurable spiritual growth? Your prayers are mostly rushed, they're done on the run. Your mind and thought patterns are not being formed and shaped by time spent in the Bible. Rather, they are simply being filled with the hundreds of messages that come at your way each and every day. And you know that your character is not being shaped by God. And if this is you, then the question I would ask you is this. Do you want to get to the end of your life with a character no better than it is today? To reach the end of your life and still be struggling with the same junk and sin as you are at this moment? See, the truth is this. Life can get moving so fast that we do not take the time to do the things necessary for God to shape our character. To do what the psalmist said, to simply be still and know that He is God. I think that is what could have led Moses down the path to his great failure. And God needed Moses to slow down and experience these 40 years in the desert, a time of obscurity and quiet, away from the bright lights, because it is in that kind of place that God often does His best work at molding and shaping our character. So is there anybody here that feels like you are on a Moses track right now? Well, let me ask you a very basic question. Was God done with Moses? No, God would use Moses to deliver the entire nation of Israel out of bondage to Egypt. He just needed some time to do His work on Moses' character. So let's look at some of the ways God used failure in Moses' life, because He will use it in the same way in yours and in mine as well. Just two principles today, okay? First, God uses failure to humble us. He uses it to humble us. You know, I believe I have learned more through my failures in life than I have through my successes. One of my favorite historical figures is Winston Churchill. He once was asked what best equipped him to face all of the setbacks and challenges of leading Great Britain during World War II. His response was surprising. He said it was his having to repeat a class in elementary school. To which he was asked, "You mean you failed to pass a class?" And Churchill said, "No, I never failed at anything. I was given a second opportunity to get it right." Churchill was a person who viewed the events of his life, both the good and the bad, as learning opportunities. And I believe that God uses every event in our lives to teach us and to mold our character so that we become more like Jesus. And the great character trait that's so shown in Jesus' life that we often lack is that of humility. We so often are prone to think that we can handle it all ourselves, when the Scriptures clearly teach that we can do nothing in this world of any eternal consequence without God. Oh, we tend to think that we are strong enough or clever enough to live life without God's direction until failure comes. And failure is one of the tools that God uses to build into us that humble attitude of reliance on Him. Let's look at another character in the Bible who experienced a lot of failure. The Apostle Peter. His greatest failure would come when he would deny he even knew Christ. But shortly before he would deny Jesus, what would Peter say? Luke chapter 22. This is after Jesus tells him, "You're going to deny me, Peter." Peter replies, "Lord, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death." Jesus answered, "I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me." "Oh, Peter, don't worry, Jesus. I've got your back." Peter needed one last course in Humility 101 before he'd be ready for the great task of being one of the leaders of the movement who would carry Jesus' message of hope, the gospel, once he was gone. And you know, I understand this because I, like Peter, had to learn the lesson, this lesson. See, most of you know my story, but when I stepped in as pastor here in May of 1994, I was overwhelmed with a sense of the incredible responsibility. Now, I knew pressure. I had practiced law for 13 years. But there, if I messed up, the result was I might lose a case. Now, if I messed up, I might impact someone's eternity. And knowing I did not have it in me to do what God wanted me to do, I pretty much placed my total reliance on Jesus to guide me. And over the next 7 or so years, he was faithful, the church was growing, and I started to lose a little bit of that humbleness. Because I started to think, hey, you know, I'm pretty good at this. In fact, I started to get a little proud of how successful was this lawyer turned pastor. Then in late 2001, approximately, things changed. All at once, a number of key families in the church moved from the area. And at the same time, our youth pastor, our programming director, and my worship leader all informed me they were leaving to take other positions. And I was devastated. Although, thank God, the worship leader's come back. And overnight, I went from feeling like I was the star in this unique success story of lawyer turned pastor to feeling like a total failure. I was so certain that within weeks, the entire congregation was going to leave that I could not sleep at nights because I could not get this picture out of my head of me preaching to a crowd of 4 people. Those 4 were my wife and my 3 kids. It was a painful time for me, but it was also a much-needed time of humbling as God reminded me who was the one responsible for any success that Cedar Run might experience. So had I failed? Well, in a manner of speaking, I had. Because much like when Peter was walking on the water, and then he took his eyes off of Jesus, remember he began to sink? I had taken my eyes off of Jesus, and I was beginning to sink until God used that experience to get my eyes fixed back on him. Had Moses experienced failure? Yes. But God would use that failure to build in him those character traits necessary to do even greater things during the last 40 years of his life. So maybe you are here this morning, and you have experienced the pain of failure. And you know you caused it. That's okay. Use it as a time to learn. Because Jesus is right there. And he wants to use this time to teach you and grow you so he can use you to do even greater things for him. Because understand this. The end of your story is not yet written, just as Moses was not. Winston Churchill would also say this, success is not final, failure is not fatal, it is the courage to continue that counts. And principle number 2, God often uses our failures to teach us to trust him, to trust him. When Moses heard the words of his actions in killing the Egyptian had become public, he was afraid. You know, fear plays an essential role in all of this because we all fear failing. And any time we step out in faith, we run the risk of failing. And this is key to being used by God because if God is going to use us to do great things for him, we will experience some anxiety. Because in order to do great things for God, you are going to have to move out of your comfort zone. And we don't often want to do that, do we? We like things nice and comfortable. There is a term in today's society for a certain kind of food. It is called comfort food. Do you know what is the definition of comfort food? Food that provides consolation or a feeling of well-being. Typically any with a high sugar or carbohydrate content. And there was actually a picture of a Krispy Kreme donut right next to that definition. Comfort foods are those that you both enjoy and that you feel good about. Asparagus or broccoli are not considered comfort foods. But let me ask you a question. Which is better for your long-term health and growth? A donut or broccoli? See, every time God calls you to step out of your comfort zone, you run the risk of failing. And that will create a healthy sense of needing to rely on God to make it happen. But if you're going to make being comfortable the highest value you seek after in life, then what do you need God for? Friends, Jesus did not come and die on a cross for you so that you could be comfortable. And this applies to churches as well as people. You know, whenever a church makes changes, it creates a sense of anxiety among some because they have just become comfortable with the way things are. And change is always uncomfortable. You know, I expect any of you who, like me, have flown on an airplane, had a moment of, will I ever get on a plane again, after hearing the details of that German Wings pilot who purposely crashed his plane into the mountain, killing all the passengers on board. You know, we all understand that whenever a plane takes off with us on it, the most critical question we can ask ourselves is, can I trust this pilot? Can I, with confidence, place myself in his hands? Can I trust in his ability and in his character? Because if he cannot be trusted, man, I don't want to get on that plane. Well, friends, every day you and I are taking another trip on this plane called planet Earth as it rotates around the sun. And the fundamental question we all must ask is this. Is there someone piloting this planet? And if so, can I place my trust in that pilot? And it is at the center of our Christian faith that God is our pilot. And when you understand that He is both all-powerful and that He loves you so very, very much, that is when you begin to overcome your fear of failure. And that is when you are ready to do some great things for Him. You know, Moses had, I expect, gotten used to things in the desert. He had a family now. Things probably seemed fairly comfortable after 40 years there. But God would then call him back to Egypt to face up to Pharaoh, and this time to redeem all of his people from their bondage and to begin their journey to the land God had promised to their forefathers. You see, God is the God of second and third and fourth and fifth chances. But so often we are so concerned when we fail about what others will think. And then, so we do everything we can to try to hide it. And when we do, we are working against God's plan to use that failure to prepare us for even greater works. God redeemed Moses' failure. And he redeemed Peter's failures. He has redeemed my failures, and he will redeem yours as well, if you will give them over to him. Because it is when you are willing to surrender your failures to Jesus and place them at the foot of the cross that God can begin to use your failures to conform you to the very image of Jesus Christ, his Son, and to do great works for God. See, friends, the God we serve is greater than our failures. So what happened? Did God use Moses? You bet he did. He used Moses to deliver the entire nation of Israel out of bondage. So let me close with this, to put a ribbon on this question. Can God use you to do great things for him? There are three characteristics I believe you must exhibit for God to use you. All three of which anybody in this room can possess. First off, he needs you to be faithful. That is, you don't give up when things get tough because your ultimate trust is in him, not in yourself. Second, he needs you to be available. See, God is not as interested in your abilities as he is your availability. Are you ready, willing, and able to move out of your comfort zone and to answer his call on your life? And then thirdly, he needs you to be teachable. To be open as God uses your mistakes and failures to help you grow and change. So if this morning you are asking yourself, how could God ever use me after the way I failed him? the way I failed myself. Friends, if he can use Moses, he can use you. If he used Peter, he can use you. If he used me, he certainly can use you. And he wants to use every one of us to change this world for him.